All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my in-depth scouting report of Falcons' second-round pick from Colorado, Isaiah Oliver.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the Internet, and of course, the host of this podcast. You can find me on Twitter at FalFans. Today, we're going to do our in-depth evaluation of Isaiah Oliver. We did this last week with Calvin Ridley. We're going to keep doing this with all six of the Falcons draft picks. This should run us into the month of June. We will have other people come on the podcast in that time to talk about each one of these players that may come after. Well, certainly the Isaiah Oliver episode will come after this scouting report. For other players, it may come before we get to those players. It just depends on coordinating the schedule with those various guests and whatnot to get outside opinions rather than just my own opinions. You know, I can't hog all the spotlight here on the Locked On Falcons podcast. But that being said, as I said with that Calvin Ridley episode, we are here to evaluate the player. This is not going to be about this player has so much upside and this much hope and whatnot. As I explained in that episode, at the beginning of that episode, explaining why it's important to evaluate the player using Austin Hooper as an example, I won't necessarily go into another 8-minute rant like I did before about that, but I will sort of make you understand, for those of you that are listening to this one and didn't listen to that one, sort of the broad strokes of why I think this is important, because I do think, as many longtime listeners will certainly know, that I do think expectations are a huge part of how people perceive players on their own teams or elsewhere in the league. And I think when you have these raised expectations, I think it does a disservice to the player, because all of a sudden the player becomes more about what the player isn't as opposed to what the player is. And I think that becomes problematic, particularly with fans, because you'll see a lot more negativity directed at that player simply because he doesn't live up to these what are essentially arbitrary expectations set by fans, which aren't necessarily set by reality. It's sort of this false perception of what a player is supposed to be due to where he was drafted or how much money he got paid, and he is not that guy. But if you actually evaluate the player and not evaluate the contract or not evaluate the draft pick, when you evaluate the player, you can come to more reasonable and rational expectations. So you don't have to be like, oh, this player is not X when I want him to be, you know, he's Y. I want him to be Y, but he's only X or something like that. And in reality, it's like, well, he's X. That's what he is. Like, you can't make an X into a Y. It is what it is. So that's why we do this. That's what we're going to do here. I should also note that part of my thing is I always try to learn from my mistakes, learn from my evaluations, to go back and revisit evaluations. That is something that I personally think not many people are accountable for all the sort of evaluations and content that they put out there. So if I miss on a player, I want to understand why did I miss on a player. If I got a player right, I want to understand why I got that right, and all the sort of things in between. And over the course of many, many years of doing this, I have learned over the years that cornerback, which is the position that Isaiah Oliver plays, is the position that I tend to have the most amount of misses with. There are players that I was high on that did not amount to anything. There are players that I was low on that wound up being really, really stellar players. I remember Chris Harris was a guy I was like, yeah, he's okay. He's an undrafted player. And he wound up getting undrafted. But like, I think I labeled him as like, yeah, he's like a camp body or something like that. He's not really has shot in the NFL. And he, you know, he's arguably been the best slot corner in the NFL for the last 4 to 5 years. Desmond Trufant's another good example of a player that I thought was like, yeah, he's okay. He's fine. He'll be a solid number two cornerback in the NFL, but he won't be anything special. And we've watched him grow and develop. And I can sit here and go down the list of all the cornerbacks I've missed. And because of that, I say that because I do want to let you guys know that of all the evaluations that I'm going to give of these Falcons 6 picks, I will probably sit here and say with unabashed confidence that I will have the least amount of confidence in my evaluation of Isaiah Oliver, because I just do not have that ability, that knack, or as good a knack of sort of understanding how cornerbacks project from the college level to the NFL level. So that is something I've missed enough times on to not allow me to have a sort of like, this is the definitive answer. Like other positions, I'll be like, you know, like, again, I'm not necessarily saying I bat 1,000 when it comes to the other positions, certainly not. But I do feel relatively confident for the most part with a lot of those other positions that, okay, these are the things that I know project well, and I feel reasonably confident that this evaluation or this projection is in the ballpark. And with the cornerback position, sometimes I'm completely out of the zip code, not let alone the ballpark. So that's one thing I'll say. So, you know, you can take this with a grain of salt, or, you know, or maybe I finally learned something and actually will get something right. So that all being said, we'll come back and start talking about Isaiah Oliver specifically in a bit. But I do want to plug, since we are talking about Falcons draft picks, of course, you guys should check out the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema. Those two guys are going to be start very soon to be pivoting towards the 2019 draft. So you definitely want to tune into that during the summer, during this downtime when not a whole lot is going on. They'll be giving your thoughts on the upcoming class of NFL superstars. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's talk about Isaiah Oliver, and let's talk about sort of where he stands out. We'll talk about the positives. We'll sprinkle some of the negatives in there, but we'll mostly start with the positives, and then we'll sort of circle back to some of the negatives he has. I think the most outstanding trait he has is the size, is the length. He's not the tallest cornerback. He's about like above average in terms of height goes at being 6 feet. But it's really the length that really stands out with his arm length, 33 and a half inch arms or whatever the case may be, you know, being up in that like 98th percentile or whatever it is. I didn't actually look up the numbers. I've seen them before, but it's in the high 90s. That's basically what I'm saying. In terms of his position group, that length is really what stands out most for him and is his greatest asset. It allows him to get his hands on a lot of passes that other cornerbacks normally wouldn't. When you have these, you know, sort of normal length for a cornerback is maybe 30, 31 inches. You know, you would think, oh, 2 inches, how much of a big difference that makes? Well, it does. And so I think, you know, when you look at Isaiah Oliver's ability to disrupt passes and disrupt throws, you see that length really stand out on the downfield passes. You know, you can say that 50-50 balls may not be quite 50-50 in favor of the wide receiver versus the cornerback due to that ability, due to that length. I think that's also a credit to his ball skills, where he does a very good job turning and locating the ball in the air, particularly on those vertical throws. He tracks it well. It allows him to make good plays on the ball and really sort of attack the ball at not necessarily the highest point, because he's not necessarily high pointing a ball like a wide receiver does, but at least time his, you know, his swats and swipes to really break up those passes. I think the other strength of Isaiah Oliver is how comfortable and how effective he is in press. Again, in large part due to that length, that ability to jam guys at the line of scrimmage, redirect them, and do all those sorts of things that really sort of disrupt the timing and the release of the receiver at the line of scrimmage. He is functional. I think functional is probably, you know, a good way of terming it in terms of off coverage. He gets the job done there, but I wouldn't necessarily say that he's great in off coverage. I think most of the times where watching him get beat this past season came when he was in off coverage. I think he has a tendency at times to give up a little bit too much cushion when it comes to that, particularly when he's facing quicker, faster receivers as opposed to the bigger guys. And I think sometimes he can struggle at times, not all the time, but at times to win at the top of the route due to that with some of those matchups. You know, given his size, he is sort of the classic big corner that isn't as adept at sort of hanging with the smaller, quicker receiver types of guys. So that is a concern for him. But again, I think he is good enough in off coverage, and I think with a lot of refinement to his technique, he can get better there. But certainly if you ask him to, you know, when you when you're a team drafting him, you're going to want him to play press coverage quite a lot more than he plays off coverage. I think that's doing a disservice to him, given his playing style. I think, you know, one of the other things positive develops you like to see this past year at Colorado, which was he was often used as a shadow corner against the top wide receiver competition, 80 phase against Washington. He shadowed Dante Pettis. Against UCLA, he often shadowed Jordan Leslie. Lastly, at Colorado State, he was shadowing Michael Gallup. For the most part, outside of those handful of games, he was mostly parked on the left side of the defense. At Colorado as an outside corner, he didn't really shadow those guys because I know a couple of times Washington would move Pettis into the slot. He didn't follow Pettis into the slot. So he's primarily an outside guy, and that's really where he's going to live, you know, as an outside man, press man corner. That's really sort of the definitive description of what his skill set is. I think he's comfortable in zone. He shows some ability in zone to play with the ball in front of him, to let things settle in front of him. As a cover three corner, which is cover three is a zone concept, but sort of is a sort of hybrid man scheme, because if, you know, as a outside guy in a zone cover three, you are responsible for the deep third of the field. But often if a wide receiver runs an outside route on an intermediate or deeper route level, you're going to basically stick to that guy in man coverage by and large. So, cover three is really sort of like the ideal scheme, I think, for him, as opposed to maybe like a, you know, I also think, like, I don't want to say that, like, oh, if he was in a 100% pure man cover scheme that, you know, like one of these 3-4 teams that like to throw a lot of blitzes and they actually ask their cornerbacks to play a lot of man coverage, I think he could do very well there, particularly because of his ability in press to disrupt the timing of the offense, because you often see these 3-4 teams play press on the outside, play press man, so that they can sort of buy their blitzers an extra second to get the ball out, or an extra second to get to the quarterback, because the quarterback, due to the blitz, is trying to get the ball out as quickly as possible. And if you can jam guys at the line of scrimmage, obviously it makes a lot of sense. So you see a lot of teams that, you know, the Rex Ryan type of defenses, the Todd Bowles type of defense, play a lot of press man. So it's not to sit here and say that Isaiah Oliver couldn't find a whole lot of success in that type of scheme. But I think when sort of looking at sort of as a pure zone corner, I just don't think that's really what he does well. Again, if you're going to play zone with him, you want to play like a cover three, which is a Seattle type of cover three, which is you're going to press guys at the line of scrimmage and then sort of like try to jam them, redirect, and then bail on the deep half, which is what the Seahawks have been known and sort of known to do with guys like Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner as well. So, yeah, I think that's sort of, if you're going to play that type of zone coverage, that's what you want to do. And I think the Falcons certainly are a team that do that. They did that more in 2017 than they did in 2016, when they by and large sort of started as a cover three team, but then sort of went to a pure sort of press man, or not necessarily press man, but a man cover one scheme, as opposed to a zone cover three scheme. In the second half of the 2016 season, they started out more as a man team. And then I think as the season wore on, went back a little bit more to a more balanced, veering towards zone. I think particularly down the stretch, they really played a lot more cover three than what I was used to seeing on film. So I think, you know, Oliver definitely fits what the Falcons do. You know, I think in terms of weaknesses, I don't think there are major ones. I think, and again, going back to what I said earlier, I think against smaller, faster wide receivers, the sort of the T.Y. Hilton, Antonio Brown types of receivers, I don't think those are going to be great matchups for him, unless he can sort of jam those guys at the line of scrimmage and get safety help over the top to prevent those guys from getting on top of him. But I do think one of the things that I do have concerns with is his ability to stick with speed. He's not a slow guy. He certainly has, you know, good speed. He has long legs, and I think he ran like a 4.50 or something around that time at the combine. So he definitely has quality speed, and you see that with his ability to defend the beat the ball. But I did notice a number of times where college receivers were able to get on top of him and create some of that separation at the top of the route on those go routes and whatnot, or those deep posts and whatnot. And so I think that's going to only get exasperated a little bit in the NFL, because you're going to be facing, you know, you're not necessarily facing all of the fastest receivers in the league playing in the Pac-12 or really any conference. But you're going to see a lot more 4-3 guys in the NFL than you typically would in college. And so I think those types of matchups are going to be a little bit more problematic for him. But I do think, again, going back to what we said at the top, with his length, part of the reason why he's going to be effective, even when guys get a step on him on those deep passes, is because the trajectory of the ball makes it come in high. And so it means that he's able, with his length and size, able to sort of break up some more of those passes, even when he gets when a wide receiver gets a step on him. So I still don't think that's going to be a major problem, but certainly if you're going to be asking him to be covering, you know, the Ted Ginns of the world, I don't know if that's going to be a really favorable matchup for him. I think in run supports, you know, I think he's okay. I think his effort is a little bit up and down. There are times when you look at it where he's not really that interested in sticking his nose in there. There are times where, you know, when he has to be, typically he's usually, the effort is mostly there. I think, you know, generally I would probably label it as more perfunctory in terms of his interest in run support. That's not a big deal with cornerbacks because they're paid based off of their ability to cover guys, not necessarily be these great run support guys. But when you play our scheme, it does sort of matter quite a bit. Where you have to be able to sort of set that edge and make tackles out in space. And I don't know if that's really a strength of his. I wouldn't say it's a weakness. I think there are times where his tackling is subpar. You know, he'll tackle high. He won't necessarily drive through the defender. Then there are other times where you watch him lower the shoulder and deliver a nice hit on a guy and show good tackling technique. So it's one of those things that I do think it needs to be worked upon. I think it needs to be tweaked and refined. And that's certainly something that the Falcons under Dan Quinn believe that they can coach guys to tackle better. And there's plenty of evidence suggesting that they can improve tackling ability with players. I don't necessarily think they can take a poor tackler and make him into a good tackler, but they certainly can take a decent tackler and make him into a better tackler or a below average tackler and turn him at least into an average tackler. So I think there's every reason to believe that Oliver's tackling will improve in Atlanta. So I don't think this is as a major an issue, but it is one of those things that at least early in his career, when he hasn't gotten all the coaching that he's going to get, you know, after 2, 3, 4, 5 years, early in his career, the run support might be a little bit more problematic early on than it is later on. So we'll have to see how that goes. Again, the other sort of weakness he has, which isn't necessarily a glaring weakness because it's a weakness that pretty much all cornerbacks show, is sort of the in-breaking routes and the crossing routes tend to give him a little bit more trouble. Again, partially due to that playing, giving up too much cushion and whatnot. But that's something that, you know, when you're playing man coverage, the in-breaking routes and the crossing routes are the most problematic for man corners. And so that's one of the reasons, what's one of the concepts that teams like to use in order to disrupt man coverage offensively. So I don't think that's a major, major issue, but I do think, you know, comparing him to guys like Trufant and Alford, I do think that's going to be a bigger issue for him than it is for those guys. But I don't know if that's a massive thing. So those are the you know, that's the main things with Oliver in terms of his traits, his strengths and weaknesses. In a bit, we'll come back and sort of put it all together and make you guys understand sort of what his floor, what his ceiling, what his potential is in Atlanta. But before we do that, I do want to plug LockedOnSports.com. This is the one-stop hub of the Locked On Podcast Network where you can find content, not only podcasts, but written content for the NBA, MLB, and also, of course, the NFL. Again, that's LockedOnSports.com. Part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So I think when you look at Oliver's play, he's mainly a matchup corner. That's, you know, I think that's a good way of sort of phrasing it, because I think he's going to be a guy that particularly the Falcons drafted him to deal with the bigger receivers that they have in their schedule, particularly in the division with guys like Mike Thomas, with guys like Mike Evans. That's really where he's sort of going to be at his best, dealing with the bigger receivers that aren't going to be able to sort of separate as well as the smaller, quicker guys and sort of expose some of the, I don't want to call them weaknesses, but some of the areas where he's not as good at, where his size is going to, his size and length is going to allow him to be able to match up with those 6'3", 6'4" guys due to that extra, you know, those extra inches on his arm length and whatnot. So I think that's what he is. I think that's what he's going to be. I think he's going to be very good at that. I think, you know, sort of when you're looking at sort of what his ceiling is going to be, I do think a guy like Xavier Rhodes is a good comp to where he could be, which is one of these guys that's a press man corner that can go toe-to-toe with a Julio Jones type of receiver, as we've seen Rhodes do a number of times over the last several years. I think Oliver is a better athlete than Rhodes, certainly. I mean, Rhodes was purely a press man sort of guy, and his change of direction skills weren't amazing when he came out of Florida State. You know, you look at a guy like Jalen Ramsey, who's probably a more sort of polished, refined version of Xavier Rhodes because he has that change of direction ability and that suddenness as an athlete, that smoothness. I don't think Oliver's on that level as athletically as a guy like Ramsey is, but I certainly think he's probably closer to Ramsey than he is to Xavier Rhodes. But I think that's sort of really where his ceiling is. Now, you can argue that Jalen Ramsey was the best cornerback in the league this past year. And Xavier Rhodes, certainly when he's on his game, is one of the 5 or 10 best cornerbacks in the league. And I sort of see that as Oliver's ceiling. I personally don't necessarily know if he's going to reach it. But again, part of that is I don't necessarily automatically do as others do, which is assume that, oh, look at a player's ceiling, be like, oh, he's going to reach his ceiling. It's like, yeah, I typically look at, okay, this is the best version of this player. Here's his floor of what he should be at the very least, and then sort of where I project the player to be is quote-unquote eye level, what I call eye level, which is between the floor and the ceiling, which is typically where your eyes look. And that's a more realistic expectation on him. So I do certainly think when you look at Oliver, he does have top 5, top 10 cornerback potential if all those things click, just because of his ability to match up with some of these bigger wide receivers like a Julio Jones, like that Xavier Rhodes has. But Xavier Rhodes is not one of those guys that you're going to put him on Antonio Brown and be like, go to work, young man, and see what you do. That, like, that's not really what he does. So I do think that's why Xavier Rhodes is a good comparison for him in terms of what he is going to be. He's not going to necessarily be a guy that wins against every type of number one receiver like you would expect a guy like a Jalen Ramsey or a Patrick Peterson, who are such prime athletes that you can think that, oh, he can cover an Antonio Brown just as well as he can cover a Mike Evans. So he could get there. Oliver could get there. I don't expect him to. I'm not trying to sell him short by any means by saying that. It's not necessarily in my wheelhouse to assume that the player is going to be the best possible version of that player. I think his floor in terms of looking at where I expect him to be, I think, like, at a minimum, he should be like a Mo Claiborne type of cornerback, which is a decent starter, not anything special. When he's good, he's good. When he's not, he's okay. Like, you can live with him as your number two corner. He's not really going to be a number one guy. But, you know, I think as a sort of nickel, presuming that he's, you know, stays behind guys like Trufant and Oliver, like, that's fine. You know, presuming that one of those guys, or if not both of those guys, wind up playing in Atlanta for the better part of the next 4 years that Oliver's under contract, I don't think if Oliver is only as good as his floor, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's perfectly fine, particularly for a second round pick when you consider a guy like Claiborne was like a top 10 pick, if I'm not mistaken. So I think Oliver's a better athlete than Claiborne is. So I have much more optimism that he should by far surpass that that floor. You know, Claiborne, a big part of the reason why Claiborne hasn't quite lived up to expectation is due to injuries and durability concerns throughout his career. He's basically maybe had like one full season in like 6 or 7 years in the NFL. So I think that's been more problematic with Claiborne and a big reason why he hasn't quite lived up to his expectations. I think Oliver should have little issue getting past that. Even if he's also suffers from durability issues, I still think he'll probably be better than a guy like Claiborne. But like that to me is like the lowest possible variable. And I picked Claiborne just because he's similarly a good press corner at LSU that has very good length. But yeah, again, I think Oliver is a much better athlete than Claiborne was and is. So I think when you sort of look at sort of what Oliver's eye level in terms of his projection at the next level, I think it's somewhere in that Trumaine Johnson to Jimmy Smith range. Jimmy Smith is a little bit of a lazy comparison just because they're both big corners that played at Colorado. I think when you look at a guy like Johnson in particular, he's a number one corner for the Rams the past few years since they got rid of Janoris Jenkins, and he was arguably better than Janoris Jenkins, at least more consistent than Janoris Jenkins when they were lining up across from each other. You know, Johnson is a guy that, you know, you can put him like the Rams did on a Julio Jones and feel reasonably confident that he's not going to die. But like, he's not necessarily a guy that you're going to go into that match and be like, we're going to be able to take Julio Jones out of the game. And I think that's kind of what Oliver might wind up being. And in this case, not necessarily Julio Jones, but in this case, a Mike Thomas or Mike Evans, who, you know, Evans is arguably a top five receiver. I think most people would agree that he's been in the top five the last 2 years. I think most people think Mike Thomas is maybe a notch or two below that. You probably heard some of the rain coming outside, so I apologize that threw off the audio a little bit, but now it seems to have calmed down. But yeah, to continue sort of what I was talking about, I think that's sort of what Oliver's potential is going to be. He's going to be the guy that against the bigger number ones that we've seen give guys like Trufant and Alford a lot of troubles, particularly Thomas and Evans. We saw that with Kelvin Benjamin as well. During when he was playing well for the Panthers. I think that's really what Oliver's brought in to do, and I think he has every reason to believe that he should be able to fare pretty well against those guys, certainly long term, particularly with guys like Evans and Thomas, who certainly will probably wind up being a thorn in our sides in the NFC South for many, many years to come, as well as various other top-tier wide receivers in the NFC as the Falcons continue to make their bid for the playoffs. I think looking at sort of where Oliver's potential is this season, immediately this year, my expectation is I think he will compete for the third cornerback spot. I don't necessarily expect him to win it. I certainly think he's capable of doing so. But my expectation is going to be it's going to be a similar situation as we saw early on last season with Duke Riley, where it was sort of Riley and Campbell not alternating, because it wasn't like every other series, but it was like, okay, if Riley gets, you know, in a game where there's 10 series, Riley will get 3 series and Campbell will get 7 series or something like that. And so and what I mean by that is in those games, you would often see Deion Jones is and Duke Riley as the main nickel linebackers, as well as you would see Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell. And I imagine you're going to see the Falcons sort of alternating that trio, with Oliver sometimes being the third corner, with Poole sometimes being the third corner. And I think it's going to sort of often depend on the matchup. I think, you know, Poole, you know, I don't have any strong evidence to support this or direct evidence to support this, but I have a very strong suspicion that Brian Poole has an advocate on the coaching staff in Marquand Manuel. And so my expectation is I think Brian Poole will wind up being the starting nickel when the season starts, but I certainly think Oliver is good enough that he could come in right away and potentially win that job. I think unlike a Jalen Collins, who is a guy that you'll often hear compared with the comparisons made with Oliver, largely due to the fact that in terms of their role and their fit and their upside, there are similarities between what Oliver is going to do in Atlanta and what Collins is going to do. But the key difference is Oliver is a far, far more polished player than what Collins was. As you guys may recall, going back 3 years when the Falcons drafted Jalen Collins, there was this strong suspicion amongst many fans, not myself, again, because, you know, I evaluate the player. But there was a strong suspicion from a lot of people when the Falcons drafted Jalen Collins that he would wind up being the starter at cornerback, and the Falcons would sort of push a guy like Robert Alford to free safety around this time of May of 2015. I thought that was pretty silly, A, because Alford isn't really a safety, and B, because Jalen Collins was far, far from polished enough and refined enough coming out of LSU to sort of be expected to come in and sort of win a starting job, particularly when you factored in the fact that he was dealing with a foot injury that was also going to cause him to miss time. I don't think those are going to be issues with Oliver. I am unaware of any sort of lingering injury issues. I know he didn't necessarily test in all the drills, but I don't necessarily know if that was due to injury issues or just him choosing not to test in some of the drills. But I do think him coming into this summer, I think he certainly has a chance. He is certainly skilled enough that it wouldn't totally shock me if he comes in and has a really, really strong camp. And the Falcons are like, we got to get this guy on the field, particularly early games against teams like Philadelphia, where you have guys like Alshon Jeffery. You can have early games against teams like New Orleans in Carolina that have Mike Thomas and Devin Funches to sort of get Oliver opportunities to go toe-to-toe with some of those bigger guys like a Jeffery, like a Thomas, like a Funches, and sort of see how he holds up. I don't expect the Falcons to basically throw Oliver to the wolves in the way of sort of like he's going to get all the snaps there, because I do think they're going to have use a healthy dose of pool, but I certainly think he is capable of doing it. So I wouldn't necessarily rule it out, but I wouldn't necessarily expect the Falcons, again, because I think they have a higher opinion of pool than probably myself and many of you have in terms of his ability and his contributions as a capable nickel. And this is different from, you know, certainly when you compare the Jalen Collins situation back in 2015, where the sort of after Jalen Collins, the number four corner was Phillip Adams. And that was basically who Jalen Collins was supposed to beat out in order to win that nickel spot. He didn't necessarily do so. Again, that was an indicator of Collins' lack of polish. Brian Poole is certainly much, much better than Phillip Adams. So I don't think Brian Poole is going to lay down and die, or roll over, I guess is a better analogy, for Isaiah Oliver. But I do think we will see an early dose of Oliver to see how sort of he holds up against some of those matchups. You look at a game like the Saints in week three, if I'm not mistaken, and sort of seeing how he handles that matchup against Thomas. And then wondering by the time we get to the Thanksgiving game against the Saints as well, is that by that point in the season, will Oliver have shown enough progress, shown enough growth that he's going to be the main third cornerback to the point where Brian Poole was just only sporadically getting reps every now and then. So that's sort of my expectation for Isaiah Oliver. I think he's a good player. I think he certainly has the upside to be a quality starting cornerback in the NFL. Certainly, like a Tremaine Johnson, be a quote-unquote low-level, lower-tier number one corner. I think he has the upside to be more than that. But I think a realistic expectation for where his potential is somewhere between Tremaine Johnson and Jimmy Smith, who Jimmy Smith being a guy that is a number one corner but isn't always as consistent as you would like in a number one corner, to certainly merit being in consideration with some of the upper-tier number one guys like a Peterson, like a Trufant, like, you know, whoever else that you want to name, Jalen Ramsey as well, Xavier Rhodes. So that's sort of where I think Oliver's potential is. I think he has the potential to reach that ceiling, but we'll have to sort of see. We'll have to see if he will be able to utilize his length and his size to be able to match up with those quality number one receivers. If he can handle those matchups, and we'll certainly see early on this season in matchups against Philadelphia and New Orleans, his ability to handle those and sort of see how he grows in future years to whether or not he's going to reach that maximum potential. But he certainly has considerable upside to be a better matchup against those particular type of receivers than the current Falcons matchups. I don't expect him to be sort of as good all around as guys that like Alford and Trufant, who have the flexibility of not only matching up against big receivers, but also fast wide receivers. I don't necessarily know if Oliver's going to have that ability, but certainly as far as handling the better 6'2" plus receivers that the Falcons face over the next 4 or 5 years, however long he's with Atlanta, if not much, much longer, I think Oliver's in a really good position to be the guy that we say, okay, you're covering that guy. And, you know, not necessarily in the way of a Xavier Rhodes feeling pretty good about that matchup, or Patrick Peterson feeling pretty good about that matchup, but at least feeling, at the very least, feeling pretty good about it, like in the same way that a team does when they have a Tremaine Johnson or Jimmy Smith. So that's sort of my expectation of Isaiah Oliver. I hope you guys appreciate the scouting report. You know, again, cornerbacks is not necessarily my strong suit when it comes to player evaluation. So if I don't sound as definitive as I may have sounded in the Calvin Ridley episode or in future scouting reports, part of that is because my reluctance understanding that that's not necessarily a position or group that I'm particularly great at. And it's something I've tried to work on over the years, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. Maybe Isaiah Oliver is the first guy to get right. And so we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, guys, if you have additional thoughts, feedback that you want to provide, you can do so on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. Of course, if it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. You can also check us out on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. Email address is LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. You can leave a comment at LockedOnFalcons.com or FalcFans.com where the show is posted daily. That email address, go ahead. If you want to get in on the fan talks, we're going to have at least one next week, possibly two, in addition to other additional content. Go ahead, send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Give me your contact information. We typically record this podcast over Skype. So if you have a Skype username, go ahead and send that to me. If you don't have Skype, it's no worries. Just give me a phone number and I can call you up and we can chat over the phone. And so if you have any thoughts, give me your contact information. Give me sort of maybe dates in the future over the next, you know, 2 to 3, 4 weeks that work better for you, times that work better for you. All that is sort of information, any particular topics that you're eager to discuss with me, any particular topics that you feel like I got so wrong in the past and you've been waiting for 4 months set me straight, and now you will have the opportunity to do so over the phone. Those are the types of things that you can put in that email address or in that email that you send over to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.